60 years on from the drawing up of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, world leaders should apologise for failing to live up to those standards and recommit themselves to delivering concrete improvements for all. That's the message contained in the 2008 annual report from Amnesty International, which works to defend human rights through more than 2 million members in countries all over the world. The report, released on Wednesday, says governments must act now to close what it calls the yawning gap between promise and performance. It warns the biggest threat is the absence of a shared vision and says injustice, inequality and impunity are still hallmarks of our world today. At the Rome launch of the report, Amnesty Italia Director of Communications Riccardo Nuri spelt out the extent of human rights violations documented over the past year.
In 2007, Amnesty International recorded execution in 24 countries, cases of torture and ill treatments in 81 countries, law criminalizing freedom of speech and freedom of press in 77 countries, prisoners of conscience in 45 countries, and unfair trial in 54 countries. This is a clear demonstration of the extent of the failure of the international community in respecting the promises of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which was adopted by the UN in December 1948.
When that first statement of fundamental freedoms and rights was adopted, hopes were high that the horrors of the Second World War were over and a new era of peace, justice and democracy was dawning. Former American First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt voiced those hopes as the document was unanimously approved by leaders of every nation present at the UN General Assembly of 1948.
This Universal Declaration of Human Rights may well become the international Magna Carta of all men everywhere.
Meanwhile, in his recent address to the UN General Assembly in New York, Pope Benedict stressed the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is still a vital tool for the protection of human rights and the promotion of justice and peace for all.
The promotion of human rights remains the most effective strategy for eliminating inequalities between countries and social groups and for increasing security. Indeed, the victims of hardship and despair, whose human dignity is violated with impunity, become easy prey to the call to violence, and they can then become violators of peace. The common good that human rights help to accomplish cannot, however, be attained merely by applying correct procedures, nor even less by achieving a balance between competing rights. The merit of the Universal Declaration is that it has enabled different cultures, juridical expressions, and institutional models to converge around a fundamental nucleus of values and hence of rights.
Pope Benedict XVI addressing the UN General Assembly in New York in April this year. Yet the details of Amnesty International's latest report make for somber reading, with killings, torture, rape and repression of dissidents being carried out with impunity in many nations. 2008, the report says, presents an unprecedented opportunity for new leaders coming to power and countries emerging on the world stage to set a new direction and reject the short-sighted policies and practices which have made the world a more divided and dangerous place.
Too often, political leaders are only looking at the political aspects and dimension and neglecting the human rights violations, which are often the cause of later conflicts or political crises.
Owen van der Bocht is director of the Africa Programme at Amnesty's London headquarters.
We felt it was important as Amnesty International to look back 60 years. I mean, in 1948, a number of states committed to a broad range of human rights, to respect them and then to fulfill those rights. And although many positive developments have been noticed since those 60 years, we also regret to see that many of those human rights remain an illusion for many people, including in Africa.
You're talking about positive developments that have taken place. What do you see as the most important areas of progress over these past six decades?
Well, after the Universal Declaration had been established, we also saw the elaboration of a broad range of human rights treaties and conventions to which many states signed up. And that really strengthened the human rights framework, and making that framework known to the citizens, to the people, to allow them to come up for their rights is certainly an important development. And we've certainly also seen it, for example, in many countries where people increasingly become aware of their rights and also increasingly demand accountability, justice and equality from their leaders and their governments.
Globalization and, of course, the media revolution in particular have played an important role, haven't they, in trying to force governments to live up to the commitments they agree to in this Universal Declaration. And yet it also seems to have hardened many politicians who've learned how to deal with such international criticism.
Well, one of the things Amnesty International continues to do is, of course, document and the various human rights violations and abuses which are taking place, put them out there in the public, and also mobilize our membership to make sure that those issues are being addressed by governments. But there is certainly also an important role to play for people on the ground, for the activists, to play their role as well. And that is certainly happening. I mean, we saw it last year, for example, when in Sierra Leone, a woman who were victim of sexual violence during the conflict, a number of years later, come up for their rights, demand reparation because they are still in a very vulnerable situation. We've seen it over the last few months as well with regard to Zimbabwe, where basically the whole civil society in Southern Africa mobilized around arms transfers going into Zimbabwe to stop those. And we really feel that there is a key role to play there for the activists in holding their governments accountable. And also that governments change their political culture and also accept that they should be accountable to the people.
And yet if you take the case of Zimbabwe there, although there was a small step in the direction of preventing the arms shipments coming into the country, the violations of human rights seem to go on unabated, with the international community able to do very little in this case to stop them.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's true. Arrests continue. And even last year, we saw that human rights defenders, political opponents, and are really at risk, arbitrary arrests and ill treatment. And unfortunately, that has only continued after the elections earlier this year. There has been some engagement from Southern African regional institutions to try to address the human rights abuses, but very limited, and they have only focused on the political dimension of the crisis and not enough on the human rights dimension. And that's where we also call on governments to take that much more into perspective. Too often, political leaders are only looking at the political aspects and dimension and neglecting the human rights violations, which are often the cause of later conflicts or human rights political crises.
We heard Pope Benedict at the United Nations earlier this year talking about the principle, the responsibility of the international community to intervene in crisis situations to protect the most vulnerable when their own government is unable or unwilling to do so. What were your reactions to his words?
Well, we certainly would encourage a stronger involvement of the international community and foremost the members of the Security Council in ensuring that ongoing human rights violations in crisis situations are stopped. It's important to stress that intervention, and certainly military intervention, is very much the last resort. A lot can and should be done under the preventive mechanisms to make sure that the situation doesn't deteriorate. And we would also continue to emphasize the responsibility of the state itself to protect its people and also to ensure that human rights are being respected. Because, for example, Darfur is a good example that when before the conflict started in 2003, human rights violations were already occurring. People were arbitrarily arrested. There were unfair trials against people from Darfur. There was a lot of discrimination. And because that hadn't been addressed, because the Sudanese government was not held accountable for those abuses, it really pushed people to get involved in an armed opposition and triggered the wider scale conflict with the dramatic situations we have seen over the last 5 years. So the earlier an involvement takes place and also addresses human rights violations, the better.
And yet so many governments hide behind this idea of cultural differences. What is a human right in Western culture is not necessarily in ours. How do you deal with that?
Well, we, as Amnesty International, we always find it a very weak argument, specifically also because many of those states have signed up to international treaties or even regional treaties, such as in Africa, where many of those rights are also spelled out in great detail. And we really consider that those rights are indivisible and universal. And the best example is, of course, the 60 years ago, the Universal Declaration on Human Rights, which contains a broad range of what we call civil political rights, but also social rights, such as the right to education, the right to health, etc. So we always found it a very weak argument to say that they are not universal or that one right is more important than another.
In his address to the United Nations, Pope Benedict also spoke about the values of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights being based on the natural law, which gives a common basis for all cultures and political contexts. And he warns particularly of the attempt to establish new rights. What do you make of that?
Well, we certainly support the... I mean, if you refer to natural law as the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, in a sense that it's indivisible, in a sense that it contains a broad range of rights, again, rights related to be free from torture, to be able to express your opinions, and also other rights in the more social economic sector, such as the right to health, the right to education, that is for us the reference. We do not have the feeling that new rights are being presented which are not grounded in that Universal Declaration of Human Rights.
Do you think there is any grounds for looking back at that declaration of 60 years ago and adapting it in any way? There's a lot of discussion around this, isn't there?
Well, for us and the International, it remains very valuable. And what we basically ask is not to change it or not to adapt it, but ask world leaders and governments in general to recommit to those same rights and same values of justice, equality, and fulfillment of human rights.
Looking back over the past year, 2007, what would you say have been the main areas of concern if you had to pick certain countries or parts of the world?
Well, if I focus on Africa, which is the area I'm most working on, I would certainly regret to see that certain armed conflicts have continued or even have gone worse in terms of human rights situations. I mean, Somalia, Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, Chad, and then also Darfur, we see that many of the victims are civilian people. Their villages are being attacked. Women and girls are being abused, sexual violence committed against them, killings of civilians as well. So that is a responsibility of all the parties to the conflict and not only of the governments. We also still see a lot of repression, activists, independent media who are at risk for expressing their opinion or for coming together to mobilize themselves to defend a specific cause. They continue to be at risk of harassment, of arrest, and unfair trials. And then, of course, and certainly again in Africa, the right to health, the right to education and food, etc., remains an illusion for millions of people on the continent. And there also we're calling for increased efforts and recommitment of their governments.
You talk about the vital role of civil society in trying to press for governments to live up to these commitments to the human rights that are contained in the document, in the Universal Declaration. What role do you see the churches or faith-based organizations playing in this effort?
Well, certainly the church or faith-based organizations in general and the Catholic Church have a lot of influence in certain countries and should use that influence in a positive way. I mean, we have seen it, for example, around the moratorium on the death penalty when there was a vote at UN General Assembly, when also in preparation of the vote, the Catholic Church played a positive role. We have seen using their influence in other human rights crises, for example, like in Zimbabwe. At the same time, we also have seen in other areas where we would also expect faith-based organizations to play an important role, where more could be done, for example, on the rights of specific people who are being discriminated.
What would you see as the most important point to celebrate as we mark this 60th anniversary of the Declaration?
Well, I would highlight the fact that the document and the declaration is still very valuable 60 years on. We hope that this anniversary will also make it or give it more publicity, that increasingly people, even in rural areas who do not necessarily have access to all the media, become aware of the declaration, of the rights contained into it, and also start mobilizing to make those rights a reality for them in their day-to-day life.
The Declaration was adopted as a common standard of achievement and cannot be applied piecemeal according to trends or selective choices that merely runs the risk of contradicting the unity of the human person and thus the indivisibility of human rights. Since rights and the resulting duties follow naturally from human interaction, it is easy to forget that they are the fruit of a commonly held sense of justice, built primarily upon solidarity among the members of society and hence valid at all times and for all peoples. This institution was expressed as early as the 5th century by Augustine of Hippo, one of the masters of our intellectual heritage. He taught that saying, "Do not do to others what you would not want done to you," cannot in any way vary according to the different understandings that have arisen in the world. Human rights, then, must be respected as an expression of justice and not merely because they are enforceable through the will of the legislators.
Pope Benedict XVI addressing the UN General Assembly in April 2008. And earlier you were listening to Erwin van der Bocht, Director of the Africa Programme at the London headquarters of Amnesty International.